I'm going to call the committee to order. Today, we have three bills on the agenda. Representative Sandsted has asked that her bill be pulled from the agenda for today. Mr. Moeller, you want to call the order or call the roll? I'm sorry.
Sure thing, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney.
Here.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Backer. Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
Present.
Representative Dabney. Representative Eklund.
Here.
Representative Haley. Representative Hassan. Representative Cagle.
Here.
Representative Kosnick.
Here.
Representative Mecklen.
Here.
Representative Moran. Representative Robbins.
Here.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Sundin.
Here. Gotcha. Representative Stevenson is here.
Got you. Representative Sundin.
Here. He's here.
Representative Zhang.
Here.
Okay. And let's see. Representative Baker. Or Representative Backer?
Let's see. Yeah, Representative Backer here.
All right, got you, Representative Backer.
Thank you.
Representative Baker? No. Let's see.
Baker is here as well.
Thank you. All right, got you, Representative Baker. Representative Haley, see you now.
Yes, here.
Okay. Yeah, quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Moeller. We have minutes at all, Mr. Moeller? No minutes?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. All right. We have three bills to go over today. As I said earlier, House File 21 has been pulled from the agenda as Representative Sandsted deals with some concerns with DEET and the unemployment folks, trying to get some clarification. So the first bill up is House File 36, Representative Nord. Unemployment insurance eligibility for secondary students temporarily modified. Representative Nord, would you care to move your bill and present your bill?
Thank you. Chair Mahoney and members, this is a bill that we have talked about it. Before I proceed, I just wanted to know, are we sending this bill to the floor? That's my assumption to the registry.
Well, as we've been told time and again by our speaker, that is there agreement in the Senate on this particular bill?
Mr. Chair, there is a similar bill with a difference of the funding source, which we have been talking about, because the Senate is assuming that we can use the CARES Act resources, and based on conversation with MMB and others, that is not feasible, but because they put an if in that policy, I think this is going to go directly to the floor. That's my assumption.
Mr. Travis, is that where we're supposed to send this? I'm sure you've talked to the CA over at Ways and Means.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Noor, after speaking with the chair for Ways and Means, that this bill would actually need to be sent to Ways and Means because of its fiscal impact. Understanding it's not general fund money, but still funds being spent still need to be seen from the Ways and Means Committee.
Oh, one more stop for you, Mr. Noor.
I appreciate
why don't you go ahead and present your bill? I see you have a 5 or 6 testifiers, so we'll try and get through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I move House File 36 to be referred to the House Ways and Means Committee, and that's my motion, and I do have an amendment to Mr. Chair.
Huh. Okay. You want to put your amendment on to get the bill in the way you would prefer? Please explain, move your amendment and explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the same bill that we have had conversation in the previous session. This is about the secondary students or high school students who have been left out of their employment, basically because there is an ineligibility in the state statute, which we have trying, quite frankly, to rectify that issue. And we have received calls from many students. We have received calls from many young people who have been asking us to correct that issue. So the amendment that I have is it's going to allow 16-year-olds and older to apply for the regular unemployment and to receive the unemployment. So this is, Mr. Chair, this is a temporary eligibility. It's not a permanent eligibility. It starts during the March 15th and goes all the way to December 26th. And I appreciate Senator Rerick and Miller who have introduced a similar bill to make the students whole again. Mr. Chair and members, I have received calls from many young people. And one of them who is actually living with his grandparent, he was also a breadwinner for that family. When this, he applied for the unemployment, he wasn't eligible because he was 17 years old and he wasn't able to get any additional resources. The place that he worked no longer provided him that employment. So he got stuck because he didn't get anything of the Coronavirus or CARES Act money, the stimulus package that many people received because he was 17 years old. He didn't get any other benefit from the state or the federal government. He struggled for many days trying to figure out how he can pay his bills, support his grandmother in terms of making payment for rent and other utility bills. It hurts many individuals who have contributed to the UI simply because they have been excluded. Quite frankly, Mr. Chair and members, I do have many young people who want to testify on this issue so they can tell you their experiences. We also have the Commissioner for Deed, who will also testify and talk about this bill and see where we end up during this special session.
Thank you. So what is your amendment?
Mr. Chair, my amendment is A1, I'm assuming. Let me pull it up.
Chair, it's the DE1.
It's a DE amendment, Mr. Chair.
You've moved your amendment. Are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1 to get the bill in order and the order that the member would care to present the bill, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The bill is in the shape that you would like it, Representative Noor. You've explained your bill. Would you like to move to your witnesses or your testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the Commissioner Groves can provide us an input on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Grove, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, appreciate the chance to share
Just some brief thoughts here, because I do think the most compelling testifiers on this topic are the youth themselves, who are facing these challenges as our economy is undergoing just an unprecedented amount of challenge. I think the core tenet of this whole bill is something that the governor, lieutenant governor, myself, all of us at DDA are really excited about, which is simply that if you're old enough to work, you should be old enough to get unemployment benefits when you can't work. And the law that prevents that from happening is from 1939. We as a state are way far behind so many of our neighbors and so many other states in this country who allow young people to access unemployment benefits in the same way, in the same level playing field as adults. So extending these benefits to people who are 16 and over just represents at its very basic level a fairness issue. But as Representative Norm mentioned, it also represents an economic stability issue. You know, these aren't just kids with summer jobs for fun, right? Many of these students who need these unemployment benefits are primary or at least secondary breadwinners for their family. That money is going into food on the table, clothes on their backs, keeping those families in sustained throughout really challenging times. And when they can't work, that's all the more challenging. I think it's all the more challenging as well because younger workers have been harder hit by this pandemic than any other age group. Individuals under 25 in our economy right now are applying for unemployment insurance at percentages that far outweigh the rest of the population. If you have a high school diploma or less in this state, for example, you are 50% likely to have applied for unemployment insurance at this point. One in two workers who have a high school diploma or less have applied for unemployment insurance. So not only is this a fairness issue, but there's an urgency to this because younger workers, because of the kinds of jobs that they work in, and the jobs being put on pause or retracted given our economic situation, you know, really need this benefit. So we're really eager to see this pass. We really commend Representative Knorr for his leadership on this. He's been extremely thoughtful. We've had several conversations with him on the technicalities of this bill to get it into a place that makes sense. There is that difference with the Senate on funding source. The Senate bill, as Representative Knorr mentioned, does pull from CARES Act funding. We don't believe that's the direction that we should go here. And just to put it into context, because, you know, we should be fiscally responsible at any decision like this. If you're expanding a benefit, you should know how much it's going to cost. We've done an estimation of this, and, you know, it really depends a little bit on how it would land, but we estimate the cost on a basis of now through the end of December to be somewhere between $13 and $27 million. If you take the conservative estimate and say that it's going to be $27 million, that represents less than 1% of the unemployment insurance money that we will have dispersed by the end of this year if current trends continue. So we are not talking about a massive amount of money, a massive percentage increase in our costs. And again, we're really just getting on par with other states who've already recognized far earlier than we have that this benefit should just be accrued to any worker who qualifies for it in the same way as the rest of the population, even if they are under 18. So just wanted to, again, commend Representative Knorr for this bill. We are in big favor of it. Myself, the Lieutenant Governor, the Governor have all met with some of the young advocates that you'll hear from today, and many of you have already heard from. They are passionate. They are thoughtful. They have organized a great effort here and have worked with Representative Knorr to put together a great piece of legislation. So I just wanted to come into the hearing and share that perspective, let everyone know here that DEED is incredibly excited about this piece of legislation, and we urge this committee to pass it and for the Senate to do the same.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm going to guess that you're looking to get off the call when you're done here. So I'm going to open it up for a few questions for you right now so that you can go on and help the state some more. It looks like Travis, I see Representative Robbins has got her hand up. Were there any others before?
Representative Sundin, I saw Representative Eklund, and then yes, Representative Robbins. That's who I have as potential questions.
Representative Sundin and Eklund and Robbins. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. And I guess this question would be addressed best by the commissioner, maybe the author. Actually, three little questions. If, in fact, we can qualify these students for unemployment insurance, would they qualify for any of the 600 federal? Is there back pay benefits for them? That's one question. I understand that the qualifying quarters to actually qualify for unemployment insurance goes back. It's a work history. I wonder how that affects people when they're 15 years old, or how far back do we go? How do we do that? And how do we track that back? And then thirdly, the education restrictions for other people that are collecting unemployment insurance, they're restricted from collecting unemployment benefits when they are in school. That's my understanding. And we're kind of setting up a double standard here. So just some food for thought here. Can you address those three concerns?
Mr. Commissioner.
Well, Mr. Chair, I might, just given the author wrote the bill, I might defer to Representative Knorr on this, if that's all right. It is his bill, and those technical questions, I think, might be best answered by him.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Knorr.
If you look at the bill, we are trying to make sure that we ensure that the education component is included, and also making sure that the students meet all the eligibility criteria before they get unemployment. So that is the safeguard that is already in there in order to ensure that 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds are included, but also meeting the eligibility requirement, which is set under the UI law. So that is already included in the bill. So we're not just taking the students for being a student and getting the income, and also looking at the quota system, which you mentioned, which also includes in the looking at the UI current law. If you look at the bill, that's exactly what we intend to do, Mr. Chair. Representative Sandin, I think that is our intention. That's what we want the department to look into.
Thank you, Representative Knorr and Representative Sandin. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the commissioner, I believe. So, Mr. Commissioner, thanks for coming on. And currently under the payroll deduction, then, do employers pay into the UI trust fund for high school age students?
Commissioner.
And then I have a follow-up.
You know, I'm going to – we brought some of our team on to answer some of the technical questions on this, but I would say that employers do pay in for these workers, and so therefore the trust fund is set up to be able to pay them back. They're just not eligible to actually pull in those payments themselves.
Okay, and then thank you, Commissioner. And that was my second question, is if not, is there a mechanism in place? But it sounds like there is, so thank you.
Yep.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I wondered if you could give us a little more specificity, Commissioner Grove or Representative Knorr, about why you are saying that the federal CARES money could not be used for this, rather than borrowing more from the federal unemployment trust fund loan program we have. And secondly, I'm concerned that this will incentivize students in the fall, especially if they're doing distance learning, to work more and be less attentive to their education, and we really don't want to provide incentives for students to not finish their high school education. So I'm just wondering how you can address that. Thank you.
Commissioner Grove.
Well, on your second question, Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, I'm not sure I understand completely why a high school student would be incentivized to work rather than go to school in the scenario that you're outlining. Can you help me understand a little bit more your concern?
Representative yes. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, yes. So my understanding from the DE is that it says for any week the applicant is a student in attendance doing distance learning through or on vacation. So my understanding is if they are doing distance learning, they qualify, but they have a lot of flexibility with that. So they might be prioritizing increasing their work hours and then maybe not putting the quality time in on their education. And, you know, I'm a very strong advocate of making sure that our kids get a fantastic education and meet their benchmarks and get their high school diplomas, and then whatever they choose beyond that. But I'm concerned that they will have an incentive to work more I'm just concerned that they work more than they would qualify for more, but I guess that's networking. Sorry.
Yeah, I would just say this. High school students, as we all know, already work, right? They work in the summer and they work during the school year too. And so this is just simply making sure that if they are separated from work due to no fault of their own, that they can take advantage of the same benefits that the rest of us do. Their employers pay into it. This is true in almost every state. This is sort of an antiquated Minnesota law that could really activate a lot more funding for our young people, who many of whom are supporting their families. You know, the CARES Act just isn't the right funding source for this benefit. We want to put students in the same playing field as adults in this place. Their employers are already paying into that trust fund for them to take advantage of the benefit. The gymnastics required to make it a CARES Act funding source would be complex, onerous, and wouldn't really solve the problem we're trying to solve here. We're trying to get this benefit lined up so that it is in line with the rest of the workforce. Trying to do some unique funding source from the CARES Act doesn't strike us as wise. It would be complex in terms of administration because it wouldn't go through the same UI system that exists. And so we strongly urge the committee to accept the bill as Nora has written it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, I would like a little more understanding of how much they're already paying in for these students. I checked with two employers in my district who hire a lot of high school students over the weekend, and they both said that they pay in for the hours that make 18-year-olds, the hours that would get them to an FTE equivalent. But their understanding of their own payroll is that they are not currently paying in for the younger employees. So could you qualify that for me?
Knowing unemployment law, Commissioner Grove, or one of the deed people that you've got behind close at hand, one of the deed unemployment people that you got close at hand to explain that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, President Robbins, that is incorrect. Okay. Employers pay into the unemployment insurance trust fund for every worker, regardless of age.
And regardless of hours worked, or does it have to accrue to a certain amount?
You have to accrue a certain number of hours to be Mr. Chair, I apologize for that. Mr. Chair,
President Robbins. I've lost control of this committee so many times, I'm kind of used to it.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, okay. I'm sorry. It's in the context of Zoom, I lose the kind of
understand.
But I do apologize. The hourly requirements for workers to be eligible for unemployment insurance, as you know, is they have to have worked up to 3,000 hours in the previous year. So it's not as if everyone just can immediately access these benefits if you've worked a single day, right? That's the hourly requirement that is there. But in order to make the whole trust fund work, the employer has to pay into that system for every hour that's worked by an employee in their business. And so the pay-in does happen. The eligibility has to take into consideration how much you have already worked.
Okay. Commissioner Representative Robbins, if I could jump in. Commissioner,
yes.
How many hours did you say they need to be to have worked in order to be eligible?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, my team should jump in here and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's 3,000 hours in the previous year.
No, that's entirely wrong. I know that. Your team needs to jump in on that one.
Okay.
Who would you like to call on?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Daryl Dannon, can you chime in for us as our legislative director?
Hey, folks. Can you hear me?
Good to see you. Go right ahead.
Hi, Hi, Mr. Chair. For the committee, I'm Daryl Dannon. I'm the government relations director at DEED. So I'll just jump in and actually say I'm not sure if the memo got circulated to members yet, but our UI team put together a pretty thorough memo for you that kind of walks through the different components of sort of how the UI tax works, how we pay out benefits for the committee. If Travis hasn't had the chance to circulate that to you, I think that will answer a lot of your questions and kind of walk through some of the technical tax components. I don't know if Travis wants to jump in and share if he's circulated that with the committee yet, but we did, I think, share that with Travis maybe yesterday.
So did you have an hour's minimum? And that, if that's a no, I think it's 300 hours.
It is 300 hours, Chair.
Thank you. Added a zero. I apologize.
It's okay. Yeah.
I see.
And
no,
it has been in writing in that memo too, which I thought might help members. I'm sorry, Chair.
That's okay. Seeing no other questions for the commissioner, let's get to the other testifiers.
Mr. Chair, sorry, Representative Kosnick is also on the list.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Grove, thank you for being here. I was kind of working on some of the questions too that Representative Robbins asked about the CARES funding. I think there's room to have further discussion there because I didn't hear, in my opinion, a substantial objection of other than it's complicated in gymnastics there. But I was wondering, you know, to kind of maybe to bridge the gap between some of the objections here and what the Senate is proposing, is there or are there or is there a way that we can maybe adjust the eligibility modifications so that we can help those that are maybe primary income if they're this young? It's unfortunate if they are. For their family, or the secondary income, and not just the summer job. So the discussion that we just had, I was glad to hear that it was 300 hours instead of 3,000 because that's almost 60 hours a week. 300 hours is just under 600 hours, or 6 hours a week. So it's not real substantial. So maybe there's room there, Commissioner, to adjust the eligibility requirement so we can target those students that we've heard in the past, and I presume we'll hear shortly, that are really relying on the income. 6 hours a week really isn't, I have a hard time believing that that's you're going to shoot too wide and not be as narrow focused on those students that really rely on the income and that they've lost their job. So, you know, maybe students that are working 15 hours a week or 20 hours a week, would be a good compromise. What are your thoughts on that? Adjusting the eligibility requirements.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, we wholeheartedly support the bill as Representative Knorr has written it. We believe that these benefits should go to high school students whose employers have paid into the system and who should have the same level playing field as any adult. Why should we make it harder for a young person to get unemployment insurance than we should for an adult when they an hour worked by a young person should be as good as an hour worked by anybody. So our perspective is that it should be applied universally the same. And this is what happens in so many other states. Again, we're operating under a pretty antiquated system here in Minnesota. And this bill would update that at exactly the right time when our young people need it most. So appreciate the creativity. I guess just from our perspective, we think Knorr has gotten it right with this language and would urge the committee to pass it as written.
Representative Kosnick, do you have a follow-up?
No, we'll wait until the end of the testimony, but I appreciate the commissioner's comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Grove. I'm going to call Matt Norris, Policy Director for Youth Prize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I'm the Policy Director at Youth Prize, where our mission is to increase equity with and for Minnesota's Indigenous, low-income, and racially diverse youth. As part of that mission, we've been working on coordinating a coalition called the Don't Forget Us campaign that's urging lawmakers to address the fact that, as we've discussed this morning, Minnesota high school students have been left out of our state's response to the historic rates of unemployment caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. The fact that high school students are currently ineligible for unemployment benefits in this state disproportionately impacts Minnesota's youth of color and Indigenous youth, as well as youth from immigrant families and low-income students. Employers pay into the UI system for high school students like any other worker, so there shouldn't be different rules for high school students from any other worker. This issue is before you today because of the inspiring hard work of several youth leaders of the Don't Forget Us campaign who have made it their mission to find a way to ensure that high school students left unemployed because of COVID-19 have access to the assistance that other workers are entitled to. Their stories have been featured throughout the media, Care 11, the Star Tribune, the Pioneer Press, and even the New York Times. This work has been the byproduct of youth-adult partnership, with the young people blazing the trail and adult representatives from a number of youth-focused organizations throughout the state providing support. In fact, we shared with you this morning a letter of support that was signed by nearly 60 organizations from across the state. These efforts have brought us to this point, the precipice of getting a bill passed to provide unemployment assistance these students have been waiting for since March. The coalition has been actively working with members of the House, the Senate, and the administration to try to find bill language and a funding mechanism that's going to work for all parties. And we really want to thank Representative Noor for his leadership on this issue today. Compared to what is being paid out of the UI Trust Fund right now, as Commissioner Grove indicated, this just isn't a huge lift. An estimated $13.7 to $27.9 million over the entire 42-week period that the youth would be eligible. For reference, Deed reported that they're currently paying out about $140 to $150 million per week. And as Commissioner Grove indicated, that means that these benefits would be a fraction of 1% of the benefits paid out from March through December. Because of this, we urge lawmakers to come together to pass this bill and make it possible for these students to get the unemployment assistance that for many of them is really about survival. We don't have time to wait for another special session. We've explored all kinds of various options. The time to get this bill done for Minnesota's young workers is now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. Lincoln Beckel, co-youth leader. Don't forget us, campaign.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Lincoln Bacall. I'm 17 years old, and I just graduated from high school a month ago. I am one of the founders, and I run Twin Cities Changemakers, which is a youth advocacy and empowerment organization that ensures that decisions are not made that impact youth without youth at the table, which is why I'm here and involved in this campaign and testifying for y'all. I lost my job because of COVID-19 back in March, and I'm now taking a gap year. I deferred in order to work a lot more and save up more money for college. I've been working since I was 14 and, you know, paying my taxes, contributing to the economy. And so when my employer was like, you should apply for unemployment benefits, I did. And I was honestly kind of shocked that when I received a letter in the mail that said I wasn't eligible. So I've been working on this campaign ever since I received that letter in April, and more as I work on it, my peers have been reaching out to me and saying, you know, I'm really struggling right now. I could really use this money. I've spoken to a 20-year-old high school student who is completely financially independent and unable to receive any benefits. You know, just so many of my friends are like really struggling right now. And the fact is, this is a matter of survival. High schoolers who work and who work enough to meet these unemployment eligibility requirements are not working because they want to spend their money on frivolous things, and they're not applying for unemployment benefits because they want to spend their benefits on frivolous things. The people who are applying for benefits are the people who are working for their survival and who are working to pay rents, utilities, food for themselves and for their families. Like, this is the reality of Minnesota high school students and working Minnesota high school students. We don't want to put young people in a situation where they have to decide whether or not they're going to drop out of high school to become eligible for these benefits, or stay in high school and maybe not be able to pay rent or not be able to buy food. That's not a position or a decision that any high schooler should have to make. You know, we're the future of this state and of this country. So young people really deserve to be supported right now through the pandemic in the same way that everyone else is being supported. And, you know, there's a lot of students like me who need this money in order to afford a higher education, in order to afford to go to college. So that's the reality of this situation. And, you know, it's just this, people are suffering right now. And I really, really hope that we're able to pass this bill now, because, you know, a lot of young people have been waiting a very long time to receive this money. And I know that, you know, since the pandemic started, I have friends who have become homeless. I have friends who have, you know, gone through all sorts of financial instability and struggles because of the position that the pandemic put them in. And I know, just like any of the adults in the state, they deserve to be supported by the state and they deserve to be taken care of. So thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. And I really hope that this is a priority for y'all, and this is something that we can pass now in order to equitably support the young people in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beckoff. Please stick around, and I'm hoping that Mr. Norris can stick around in case there's questions. I'm going to go to Cole Stevens, the co-leader of the Don't Forget Us campaign.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So, my name
please
is
identify Cole. Yourself for the tape and proceed.
Absolutely. My name is Cole Stevens. I live in Bloomington, Minnesota, and I am 18 years of age. I graduated Roosevelt High School in May of this year, and I've been working to help support me and my dad for about 2 years now. So that means that I help for rent, utilities, internet, phone, groceries. And during the school year, I worked an average of 25 to 30 hours per week in food service. And I've also been a freelancer since middle school. So that involves fixing computers, fixing bikes, editing video, doing audio production. And in March, the coffee shop I was working at closed permanently because of the pandemic and subsequent lockdown. At my boss's encouragement, I applied to DEET for benefits. To my frustration, I was technically approved, but for the amount of $0 with no explanation. And this went on for about 4 weeks. And then DEET actually, after the 4 weeks was up, sent me the back pay for those weeks I had requested, total of $3,714. $1,314 for state UI, $2,400 for the federal boost money. And by this time, my dad and I desperately needed to get back on our feet, and so I right away spent that money on rent and other bills. So when I received, my plans for the rest of the money was to launch my audio production business and to help my dad out of credit card debt. But about a week after I received the money, I actually received a letter from Deed demanding to pay the full amount back because I had received the money during a period which was my like last couple months of high school. So, you know, I was ineligible, right? So instead of being able to help my dad out of credit card debt, now both of us are in debt. And actually, right after I graduated high school and then became eligible as a result of that, I actually started working right after that. So I've been unable to collect benefits because of that as well. And my job is I disinfect commercial buildings from the COVID-19 virus and other biological hazards. I do fire, water damage, mold sealing. So as you can see, I'm not just some lazy teenager trying to maximize his welfare here. You know, I needed that money back then when I was in high school. And I wasn't able to get it, and I'm still working, choosing to work instead of sitting around at home collecting unemployment benefits, even faced with the reality that a lot of those long 12-hour days that I'm working could just be going to pay back Deed, unless we can get this bill passed so that we can support our hardworking youth all across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Please stick around in case there's questions. Melissa Heising.
Good morning.
Sorry. Oh, my bad.
Sorry. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Heising, and I'm legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. The state's labor federation of more than 1,000 local unions who represent more than 300,000 working people throughout our state. Our mission is to improve the lives of working people, to bring economic justice to the workplace, and social justice to our state and the nation. I'm here in support of House File 36. This committee has heard compelling testimony from students in a variety of circumstances who are supporting themselves, supporting their families, and or taking PSEO courses, which means in effect they're working their way through college. Students are more likely to work in industries that were devastated by the pandemic, like food service and retail. And younger workers have been the hardest hit age group. According to unemployment data from Deed, unemployment claims by workers under age 22 rose 2,755% from 2019 to 2020, which is at least double, triple, or quadruple the percent increase compared to any other age group. We are living in a time of record inequality and economic hardship. Secondary students should have the same access to this vital social insurance program as any other worker. Please support working students in Minnesota and vote in favor of House File 36. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we're well past the 30 minutes that I tried to accommodate for each bill today. So keep your questions for the testifiers brief if you can. Are there any questions for the testifiers?
Chair, we had Representative Moran reached out for a question.
Representative Moran, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to first say I want to thank Representative Knorr for bringing this bill forward and supporting our young people. I do believe that, you know, if we have young people, whether they're students or youth or how we decide to see them, that if they are working, they are working because they need to work. Whether they're helping their families, whether they're trying to support themselves or to be, whatever that may be, they are doing it. And so they need to be able to be in a pool that can receive unemployment, especially during a time of the pandemic. And so I just wanted to first show my support for the bill that Representative Knorr had brought forth, but also to the students who have decided that school was important to them, but also being a part of the workforce was not only important, but a necessity to do so. As a young youth myself, I started working at 13 years old and worked throughout my teens because I knew I had to also support my family and be a support that was also having to take care of myself. And so, it is long overdue. And, you know, I'm always surprised about who we decide is worthy of something and who is not worthy of something. And so I hope we can remove ourselves from that type of mindset and allow these young students to get the unemployment that I believe that they so deserve and need, especially during this time in a pandemic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Are there any other questions? Representative Koznick has his hand up. Let's go with Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either of the testifiers, what would be an average amount of hours worked in the summer if you didn't work during the school?
This summer, my plan was to work 40 hours a week. Last summer, I worked 40 hours a week, and the summer before that, I worked about 40 hours a week. So that's like my expectation to be able to complete that number of hours. And that's one of the main reasons that I'm deferring is because I was counting on being able to work that much during the summer. And now I've been unable to find a job that is like safe for me and my family.
Okay, thank you. So I guess it would be, you know, 12 months in the summer, if you did actually work 40 hours, that's very ambitious. That'd be like 480 hours worked in that year. I think the compromise here to the committee is adjusting the eligibility of the previous hours worked so that we can target the students that are helping their families that really are relying on the income for survival, like Representative Moran had said, rather than, you know, kids that might have a summer job, and if they don't have one, so be it. You know, maybe, you know, just working a little bit to get started in the workforce, but not really, their family isn't relying on it. And then we can help more people and also preserve the trust fund or the funds that we, if we use a different source, the whole variety of families in the population that have really paid into it over a more significant amount of time. So I would encourage the author, Representative Knorr, to take a look at maybe that would be a good compromise that would help you bridge the gap over in the Senate. Thank you.
Representative Jay Zong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Knorr, for bringing this bill forward. I can't help but think when I was a 16-year-old working while I was still a student. And my parents came to this country as refugee immigrants. I was born and raised here and public housing at the Rondo neighborhood, just a stone's throw away from the Capitol. It brings me joy to hear that we have such program, that we will be pushing for such policy here. And so I appreciate what you're doing, Representative Knorr, because I can't imagine, had I been a 16-year-old during a pandemic like this back then, where my family would be. I was supporting my siblings and my family. Both of my parents were working full-time. My grandmother didn't speak English, so she couldn't work. And I was a source of income for my family. So this means a lot to me. I really appreciate this, and I urge all members to support Representative Knorr in passing this bill out of committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't see any other questions. So with that, I will add these comments. I've taken advantage of unemployment as a construction worker for my whole career. It wasn't open to me to take advantage of it during high school when I was laid off because of a fire at one of the places that I worked. I don't see any reason to treat these youth any different than someone who has worked 20 years in the construction field or any place else. As a matter of fact, one of the things that irritates me is that we can't cover the school workers, the cafeteria workers, the bus drivers, and a variety of others. If you've worked, you should get unemployment. And whether you've been working for 6 months or 60 years, it shouldn't make a difference. This bill only goes till December the first of the year, from March to the first of the year. It's a temporary fix. Next year, I hope the unemployment compensation, whatever advisory committee, that's it, takes this bill up between now and November, or at least December, I should say, and wholeheartedly supports extending unemployment benefits to 16-year-olds. I have some concern with getting it any farther, but I'll leave that up to them and their recommendations, and actually get their recommendations back to the Capitol ASAP in January, so that this bill can be taken up and make it permanently. If you work after the age of 16 and are laid off, you are eligible for UI benefits. You have to work 300 and a couple odd hours to get to in the quarter that you're claiming. So with that, members, we will take, I will let the bill author have the final word, and then we'll take a roll call. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The youth have spoken. They have told us not to forget them. So in listening to them, the rules were changed on them. The rules were not fair how they're written right now. Mr. Chen, members, this bill is just a temporary way to level the playing field for the students. They need us now more than ever before. The pandemic has had impact on many youth, and they've called us for many, many times. You have seen the support coming from many individuals on this issue. Members, I urge you to support this bill. I will work with our Senate colleagues to get it done. This is the moment that we need to step up. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to renew my motion, House File 36, to be referred to Ways and Means Committee as amended.
The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Nay.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Dabney. Representative Eklund.
Eklund, aye.
Representative Haley.
Nay.
Representative Hassan.
Hassan, aye.
Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Representative Koznick.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Okay. Representative Baker. Okay. I have 9 yeses, 6 noes.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Representative Nora, you're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you. At this point, I have a bill up. So we will ask, I'm going to ask Representative Nora to take over the committee as vice chair, take over the committee.
Mr. Chair, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you. House File 28, I believe, goes to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, the motion is to re-refer House File 28 to the General Register.
I think it might be my first bill to the General Register. Members, I would refer House File 28 to be passed and referred to the General Register. House File 28 is a bill that extends for the rest of this year until July 1st of 2021, the ability for Deed to use the job creation and the MIF and the Minnesota Investment Fund dollars to give them an extension of 1 year to the members that they have, to the businesses and members of the business community that they have extended those particular funds to. It's a pretty simple bill. We did both sides. I have agreement with the chair and the Senate on this particular bill. It is something that probably should be looked at next year to see if they can, if we can improve those two programs. With that, I'll stand for questions.
Are there any questions for Chair Mahoney on House File 28? I don't see. Are there any questions? Seeing none, will you, Mr. Chair, please renew your motion for House File 28?
Thank you.
And your final statements.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good idea. The pandemic has really slowed things down in terms of being able to do the hiring or do the construction that these businesses need to expand. This is a simple bill. So members, I would ask for your support to move House File 28 to the General Register.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. Chair Mahoney renews his motion to refer House File 28 to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Backer.
Yes.
Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
Yes.
Representative Dabney. Representative Eklund.
Yes.
Representative Haley?
Yes.
Representative Hassan?
Yes.
Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Mecklen?
Yes.
Representative Moran?
Yes.
Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson? Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Jiang?
Yes.
I have 15 yeses, zero noes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm on my way.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Is Representative Dabney on the call?
Not yet, Mr. Chair.
I know he is in a space where cell service is pretty spotty at the best. I'm going to be in that particular place in August. I've worked pretty closely with Representative Dabney. So if Representative Knorr would stay in the chair, I will explain this House File 37 and stand for any questions. I think there's one testifier from the American Association of Architects or Institute of Architect. So let me explain the bill. Well, I'll wait for the chair to call on me.
Mr. Chair, go ahead and present the House File 37.
We need to move the bill before the committee before we do anything else. This bill will also be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you. So I will make the motion for House File 37 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, this is the same bill we saw a month ago with a good number of changes, about seven or eight changes to it to tighten it up a bit. The last bill like this was House File 132. It allots $167 million, I'm pretty sure, to the civil unrest relief bill. I don't know if there's an official title. It is either Article 2 or Article 3 of the Promise Act. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to assume that everybody remembers what a glorious bill it was last time. And then just go over the changes that we made. We tightened up the community organizations. Instead of grants to the community organizations, which would have been a lot of steps to get them eligible, we sent grants to eligible organizations defined as community development financial institutions, such as the Neighborhood Development Corporation or MEDA, number of others. They've been doing this for a good length of time. They showed their ability to do grants and loans with the coronavirus relief bill that was passed last special session. And rather than sending money to the Port Authority or to Minneapolis, to the two cities of 17.5, the piece that it will have the ability to purchase and preserve land for to continue the these smaller businesses and prevent developers from coming in and waving cash and buying properties and then changing the whole flavor of these neighborhoods. It will go to Minneapolis Community Development Association, or MCDA, and the St. Paul Housing and Resource, St. Paul's HRA, which is basically their community development group, one of their community development organizations that's tied in with the city. The second, it requires the entities to be registered businesses and nonprofit. anyone paying taxes probably should be registered already, so it should not be too much of a burden at all. And as I said, we're just making sure that the deed and everyone is on a legal and comfortable position there. Requires the grant recipients to stay in the community also. We didn't have that piece in there. And a plan, and they have to have a plan for continued operation. And these are already required of the loan recipients. We're just leveling that playing field and tightening it up so that someone can't just take a grant and then move 6 or 8 blocks off a university or Broadway or Lake Street. It exempts the program from most of the usual grant-making rules in order to make the aid available as soon as possible. It allows for a 7% for administration instead of 4. That one deed relayed what they expect to have to do in terms of hand-holding of the organizations and the businesses. And out of that 7%, they will allot to these organizations that are making the grants or the loans money so that they can help in terms of business planning and getting their businesses back up and on a better footing and hopefully require business insurance, more business insurance. Again, it directs the land banking appropriations to the MDCA and the St. Paul HRA and adds appropriations for community re-imaging. That comes out of the $167 million. These communities have really suffered a trauma, and they're very concerned that no matter how good of our intentions or tools that we put out there, developers will come in and change the flavor of the neighborhoods. So it's best that they have an actual plan so that when these developers and people come in and try to build new things and put in apartments and everything else, they do it in a flavor that does not change the neighborhood so much that you couldn't recognize it. Those are the changes that we made to House File 132 for House File 30 Special Session 2 or Second Special Session. House File 37. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Mr. Chair, I don't see anyone raising hand for question. Would you like to call the testifier? I believe it's
Mr. Oh, that's right. Thank you. And I'm not sure I have that information.
I believe it's
Mary Margaret Zen. Zender.
Yes, thank you, Chair Mahoney. Thank you, Vice Chair Noor, and members of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. We appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 37. I'm Mary Margaret Zindrin, the Executive Director of Minnesota's State and Local Chapters of the American Institute of Architects. I'm testifying on behalf of AIA Minnesota, as well as the local chapter of the National Organization of Minority Architects. We strongly support this bill and urge swift action. The longer the legislature waits to assist the affected areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the more difficult it will be for these communities to retain and grow businesses and to foster a promising future for residents. Minnesota's architecture community is committed to protecting the public's health, safety, and welfare through the buildings and streetscapes we design. But over the past few years, our architecture community has deepened its understanding of the ways the built environment has actually harmed Black and Indigenous communities and people of color. We are actively working to address this harm and to create a built environment that promotes wellness and equity and addresses past injustices related to negative environmental impacts and opportunities denied for property ownership and generational wealth building. Based on what we've learned from working with neighborhood leaders these past few weeks, we believe the actions included in this bill are absolutely appropriate and necessary to serve the public interest. We strongly support the provisions in this bill that accelerate cities' ability to acquire and hold property with the goals of preventing displacement, retaining existing businesses, and maintaining the character of the community in ongoing consultation with groups of local residents. We would advocate that this purpose be overtly expanded to include creating opportunities for ownership and generational wealth building for Black and Indigenous people and people of color. We also strongly support the provision that provides for grants to cities for community reimagining. We would note that the community reimagining referenced here will need to be conducted in a manner that is much broader and deeper than what is typically implemented as community engagement in development and design processes. The wounds are too deep, the opportunities too great to have reimagining follow the standard path. Finally, we encourage cities and CDFI organizations to subgrant to nonprofits led or administered by people who reflect the current demographics of the affected communities and of those who have been historically displaced from those communities. This bill is an important first step. There are appropriate emergency actions that address immediate needs, lay a foundation for reimagining, and make it possible for a better built environment to be created for the future. We urge the approval of this bill during this special session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zindrin. Just wanted to ask if we have any questions for the testifier or the Chair Mahoney. Any comments or questions on this bill? I see Representative Rena Moran. Please go ahead and ask your question. Representative Moran. We'll come back to Representative Moran.
No, here I am. I'm here.
Go ahead.
I had to unmute. Sorry about that. I was speaking. So I don't have a question, Mr. Chair, but I'd just like to just give members a little background. Some of the things that we was hearing from, like, business owners who were impacted by the civil unrest. And there are different levels of impact. There are just simply some businesses who, after insurance, there still is a hole left there, where some businesses may just need to, you know, whether it's replacing their inventory or windows or a roof, where that gap is needed for some businesses, that this type of help and support from the community, from the state, will be helpful. And so I just wanted to share that so that people, so that members can see that there are different levels of the needs out there. Some businesses could probably, you know, open up quicker than others. And for those who just immediate, if there can be immediate relief, it will be helpful for them to be able to move forward and to be a part of the community that they have been a part of for years. And so I just wanted to kind of like just share the information about the need and the necessity for the state to be a part of that rebuilding process. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moran. I have Representative Haley.
Thank you, Representative. Here, I'll turn my video on. Thank you, Representative Noor. Oh, I just wanted to comment, Representative Noor, on the work and share with the rest of the Jobs Committee the work that the bicameral bipartisan kind of task, I guess, I don't know, we weren't a task force. We were an assigned group. You and Representative Hassan were on it. Myself and Representative Damuth representing the House GOP, and then members of the Senate, both DFL and GOP. So we worked for a week. It felt like a month. We put in a lot of hours and a lot of late nights talking about the Promised Act and talking about the various provisions and discussing areas where we reached agreement and areas where we still had different opinions.
So this House File 37 is taken from your original Articles 2 and 3 in the Promise Act. And fundamentally, I just want to speak to that we share your concern about the damage. We have had dozens of in-site visits as well as meetings with stakeholders, the CDFIs, the nonprofit groups, the Lake Street Councils, conversations with individual business owners. It is staggering, the damage that happened to those businesses through no fault of their own. But frankly, government let them down, both at the city level and the state level. So we did not disagree that we would like to support these business owners. And it's fundamentally very important for the entire state to see both the areas in Minneapolis and St. Paul rebuild and have safety and also have, you know, commerce for those neighborhoods. So in what you're proposing today, it still hits on where we had an impasse, and Representative Knorr, you know, obviously you know these conversations well, so I won't go into a lot of detail, but two fundamental things in your proposal today are general fund revenue, which we don't have and facing a deficit, so we need to find some other revenue source in order for this to move forward. Also, we would have disagreement with calling out specific money to the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We'd prefer that those monies go directly to the small business owners. And then finally, just concern over not having a Senate path that right now has been laid out so that this could have bicameral support. I know that you've included the investigation language in this bill, which we also want to see. I have not done a comparison, but we do support the that provision as written by Representative Nash on our side. So thank you, Representative Knorr, for all the hours and all the conversation. And I hope that at some point here we can have the opportunity for a bill that can support these minority business owners and start bringing the neighborhood back to life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Haley. Chair Mahoney, any comments on that?
Well, I will comment and say that, excuse me, that I did appreciate the work, and Representative Knorr kept me abreast of what was going on with the working group. I also am disappointed we could not come to agreement on how to fund this. It is important that we show that we are one state. And we as a state always have come to help communities that were in trouble, whether it was through fires, floods, tornadoes, a particular virus here or there. And it would certainly send the wrong message if we didn't find a way to come to the aid of the cities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and all the other areas that have been affected by riots. Where this is in the Senate, I am unsure at the moment, but we do need to come together as a state legislature, as the government of this state, and find ways to help the communities that have been affected by this, and worry about blame later. If we need to investigate this, that, or the other thing, fine. But right now we have small businesses that really don't feel there's any hope. And if that's the case, they are much more likely to pull up stakes and leave, which does a number of things, from lower tax revenue, opens it up to regentrification, and then that just moves low-income families from one area to another. There's a whole set of reasons that we need to step up and make sure that these small businesses stay in business on Lake Street, on Broadway, on University, and some of the other areas. And my area was affected. Representative Zong's area was affected a little bit. If there was a law broken somewhere in there, find a way to hold people accountable for the actions that they did in those 4 days. So with that, I will turn it back to the chair.
Thank you so much, Chair Mahoney. We have Representative Dabney, who is the chief author of the bill. Welcome, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Mahoney, for stepping in my delay to join the committee today. Much appreciated. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where we're at in the discussion, and I don't want to force the committee to review what Chair Mahoney has already covered.
We do have, Representative, we do have some questions, so I'll go to Representative Koznick, and we'll get back to you at the end.
Thank you.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I had about three kind of topics for whoever is kind of, you know, Chair Mahoney or Representative Dabney or yourself. I guess I'd start first. You know, one of the things that I see is critical, and we've been engaged in talking with the business community, the other organizations in all three of the affected areas. And one of the things that I see that's missing in this particular bill and the overall arching Promise Act as well is addressing any of the security concerns that the business owners have, that their employees have. And certainly if there's concerns with security and safety in those areas that still remain a little bit, not as intense as probably 3 weeks ago, but stores certainly, a lot of the few of the restaurants, they're not staying out open as late, and we don't need to rehash a lot of the violence that has occurred since the unrest or riots. Are you anticipating addressing any of those concerns? Because I don't see that here. And then I have two other items.
Chair Mahoney.
I will say this. I understand, and we all understand, that any of us who watch television or read the newspapers understand that Minneapolis is in the middle of trying to figure out who, what, and how they're going to proceed with their police department. So I won't try to even, I'll leave that up to the either Chair, Representative Noor or Representative Dabney. I think any business deserves to feel safe in the environment that they're in. And I certainly hope that Minneapolis finds a way that they, that their police department can re-earn the trust of the community, because that was one of the reasons of the unrest. They don't trust their community, and they don't feel like they're being heard. Those are really, really important pieces. But those businesses, most of the businesses that have been affected, whether it's Broadway or University or Lake Street, had adequate and comfortable safety and security concerns met as best as was possible. And they provided a business and a business location that prospered for, again, the last 20, 25, 30 years. Can we improve security? Always. But I believe we have to figure out ways that involve the community itself, the community residents, and how we find that. Representative Noor or Dabney, if you care to add to that particular question.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Representative Koznick, as you know, as Representative Mahoney touched on, Minneapolis is engaged in a very vigorous conversation about how best to assure public safety in Minneapolis. The business community is certainly a part of that conversation, whether it's the downtown business community with their loud voices or the individual small businesses in the impacted areas and in the neighborhoods. Everybody, the community and the business community, deserve to feel safe. Chair Mahoney is absolutely right. The Minneapolis Police Department has lost the trust of the community. They did not have the trust of many in the community even previous to the murder of George Floyd. They've lost a lot of trust since then, and there is going to be a long process of rebuilding that sense of public safety and trust. And looking at models from around the country that might be more effective.
Well, I appreciate those comments, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Okay.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have some more discussions offline. We've got some ideas from a lot of the business owners that in those areas, and I also had a property owner, but also walking through Central Mercado, my wife ran into a guy that lives here in Lakeville, just outside of my district. But so it is a regional thing, and there's a serious concern about the security in that. Maybe we've got some ideas that maybe we can work on later. Just two other points, and I don't want to belabor this. We've got in the bill a deed needing $11.7 million to administer this program. That seems it is a big number, but it seems really high for being able to administer. I don't know how you, that amount is derived, if deed can comment on that, but simply to pass through the funds to the CDFIs and the groups, it seems like an awful lot of money. I know deed is being passed with quite a bit through the current crises, but so if you could comment on that, and then really just more of a question so that I can kind of understand, having a former real estate license, we're talking about the gentrification, some comments that have been made publicly by committee members. I just want to understand, you know, from residential and maybe commercial properties different. I know in many respects it can be, but when we're trying to sell property or prevent certain groups from buying property, that generally gets us in trouble for sure with residential property. But is that an issue that we're concerned of when we're talking about only selling properties to people that look like people in certain communities? And I'm not really taking a position, but I just want to understand that if someone has comments on that second part too. So the administrative cost to deed, and then how we resell property to people that are currently look like people in predominantly in those areas. I have just a question of understanding on that. I understand the intent, and if you could help me understand that, that would be great.
Representative Abney.
Thank you, Chair Noor. My understanding, and staff is always free to correct me, is that the percentage set aside for administration is to be shared by deed and the CDFIs to allow them to be able to finance their work with these organizations, with these businesses. So it's a shared percentage that's available, and we know as you get more and more organizations involved, which is important because of the community connections they have, they need funding to be able to carry out their work as well. As to the gentrification, I think we need to recall that Minnesota has some of the largest income gaps between racial groups and largest wealth gaps. And to me, the concern about gentrification is at least two-part. Representative Chair Noor may have greater insight, but one is the loss of community control. Many of the businesses along Lake Street, along West Broadway, and I'm sure along University Avenue, are owned by people here in the Twin Cities. You've referenced Representative Kosnick having constituents who own property in the area. Some of the businesses are owned by people who live in the community. That means that the income and the wealth stays in the community. That's very different than having someone in another state, or having a REIT, an investment pool, or people in another country owning that land and extracting the wealth from these neighborhoods. And underlying the civil unrest, besides the issues with policing, is, I believe, these issues of income gaps, wealth gaps, and other gaps between racial groups. And we're not really going to rebuild these communities if we allow them to gentrify and allow the wealth created by the people who live in these communities, shop in these communities, work in these communities, to be extracted to other states and countries.
Mr. Chair, if I just to clarify, Representative Dabney, I absolutely understand the intent, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I'm just wondering, are we able to put programs together that permit the selling to other people and encourage selling to certain ethnicities? That's just more of a general question, really. I don't disagree with the intent, Representative Dabney. Like I mentioned, from on a residential real estate level, that we certainly cannot discriminate on who you sell, show, or lease property to. Commercial can be a little bit different, and I'm looking for some clarification if maybe staff can, or we can follow up later too. I don't want to belabor the point, gentlemen and women. Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Mahoney.
Representative Koznick, the $5 million that was allotted in this bill to both cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis is primarily, as I believe, and I don't have the bill in its entirety in front of me, but was for commercial properties, not residential properties. That would be way inappropriate in my mind. I believe there will be gentrification of all three neighborhoods to some extent. Mm. You can't, money will win out, unfortunately, too often. But the community revisioning hopefully can work with some of those developers that will inevitably come in to do the best they can to fit into the neighborhood and continue to rent at reasonable rents for these small ethnic businesses to get started or to move out of some of the incubators that they already have on Lake Street. We had one that was being worked on over in St. Paul that I know of. There could easily be more, and move into these nicer or more modern accommodations. I think that's the biggest piece that I'm worried about. But you inevitably will have retail pieces on a first floor and apartments on a second floor. It's going to happen. We need more housing in inner city and in suburbs and all around. We are a growing state and a growing city, cities. So we are going to have some of that happen. But that money, that $5 million for each city, is to partner with nonprofits, philanthropics, to grab some of those corners that are really retail or community organized kind of shops. I don't want to belabor the point either. There's going to have to be some land banking that allows people in the community to envision what they want and work with developers that will come in and change some of these things. So I think it's not unthought out, but I want to go back to the 7% administrative fees in the CDFIs. I have intimate experience with one, and I'll just explain that small restaurant seated 25 or 35 people, I don't remember exactly how much, had opened up reopened an old restaurant that had been iconic on the east side and changed it dramatically. His chef quit, and his bookkeeper had some ability issues. I'll say it that way so I don't get sued. And NDC had to come in, and they spent well over a couple hundred hours working with this young man, a veteran, a great cook, and a community and involved in our community deeply. And that cost money. Yeah, as it was explained to me from Dean, some of these are $50 an hour, some are $120 an hour, and that has to be paid for. You can't expect, well, you could, but it wouldn't really work. Somebody with a deeper pocket than philanthropic organizations to come in and help support that assistance to these smaller businesses, because not everybody has an MBA in business administration. some of these folks have a vision and they have to be helped in terms of how they get to that vision, which therein helps the community. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I didn't want the money to stay parked at Deed. I recognize the absolute need for the CDFIs to have operating capital, and I recognize through a variety of conversations that we've had with our working group from the Republican side that there is capacity and time issues and resources that they certainly need to be reimbursed for to participate in. So just that was my clarifying. I didn't know if it was staying at Deed or being passed through, and that's just fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. I have Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Daphne for bringing this bill up. This is a really important bill. As someone who represents Lake Street, I will just share with you guys what I'm hearing from my community. I'm hearing from my community that someone failed them, whether it's local government, state government. I'm also hearing from them that they're taxpayers, they deserve protection and support when there is, you know, things like what has taken place, the civil unrest, COVID-19, many other issues, and the fear of gentrification is real. I will speak on Lake Street because that's where I'm familiar with, but I'm sure this is true for West Broadway and University. The thing about Lake Street is that most of the businesses on Lake Street, many of the businesses on Lake Street are Black and brown folks, immigrants. Many of them are first-generation immigrants who came to this country with nothing, started, you know, saved up, worked really hard, started a business with everything that they had, are trying really hard keep that business alive. The civil unrest happened. Many of them lost everything they had. They don't have a saving account. They don't have, you know, someone else to bail them out. They don't have a rich uncle somewhere that's going to fix everything that has been broken. So, and another thing about Lake Street is that the proximity. People who are on Lake Street cannot move, the business owners cannot move and open a business in Edina or Lakeville or Minnetonka because the people, the communities that they serve are in South Minneapolis. So they can't just up and, you know, take insurance money or whatever and open, you know, a store somewhere else and still serve the people that they're serving. So the fear of gentrification is real, and we want to make sure that Lake Street stays Lake Street. And I have said this before, I'm not against Starbucks, but I don't want Starbucks and Trader Joe's and all of this mainstream businesses to open up in Lake Street. And then we miss, you know, Mercado Centralo and, you know, the, you know, Midtown Global Market and the small corner, you know, that sells spices and things from, you know, Jamaica. I want to make sure that Lake Street stays Lake Street. And the only way Lake Street can stay Lake Street is that if we're intentional about what we're doing right now. So I thank the bill author for, you know, everything that's included in here. I want to thank Representative Haley and Representative Damoth for the uncountable hours that they have worked with us. You know, I just wish we had just come to an agreement and we didn't have to. I apologize for the baby screaming in the back. I guess that's the new normal in Zoom life. I wish we had more agreement. We had come to an agreement. And I also want to highlight that the Senate GOP never came to the table with those conversations with us. The House, the DFL Senate were there, but the Senate GOP never came and never engaged in this conversation with us. But Representative Haley and Representative Damoth, the work that you have done with us is admirable, and I thank you. I just want to say that I want to plead with you and ask you to please help us help our small businesses open their doors and resume normal life, whatever normal life means to them. And this is what this bill is doing. I know people are just hang on, you know, sometimes the idea of where's the money coming from. But if there was a tornado that tore down somewhere in southern, you know, Minnesota, just ask yourself, and you represent that district, would you be comfortable having this conversation and people asking you to align the T's and the dots and everything and asking you, this makes no sense. Where is this coming from? And when we talk about Lake Street, you know, West Broadway and University Avenue, we're talking about Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities, people that our systems have intentionally left behind for many, many years. So that's all I have to say. And I thank you for Representative Daphne for bringing this bill and everyone who has worked alongside with us to come to some sort of a solution to solve a crisis that's really, you know, happening in our district. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Any closing comments from Chair Mahoney and Chair Daphne?
I believe we've had a good, thorough discussion of this bill. I ask for your vote.
Chair Noor, Chair Mahoney, thank you very much for stepping in my absence. Thank you for the committee. Thank you to the testifiers. I believe that as Minnesotans, we take care of each other, and that's what House File 37 is about, is Minnesotans taking care of each other. We have the opportunity to make sure that these communities come back diverse and dynamic, but it requires us to be engaged with our neighbors, and I ask for your support for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both and everybody else who will have been involved in this. So Chair Mahoney renews his motion for House 537 to be referred to the General Register. With that, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
Yes.
Representative Daphne.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
At this time, no.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Cagle. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Michael, can we pause the vote for 1 second and clarify the motion? I've gotten a few questions and concerns that there was a confusion on it. I apologize for jumping in, but sure. The chair, repeat the motion.
The motion is to refer House File 37 to the General Register.
The original motion at the beginning of the debate was to Ways and Means.
We'll make that clarification. It's to refer the House File 37 to the House Ways and Means. Thank you for the correction.
Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
May I jump in here? Just to make sure, you're going to need to start the roll over again under the clarification of the motion.
You got it, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker? Representative Claflin?
Yes.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Eklund?
Yes.
Representative Haley?
No.
Representative Hassan?
Yes.
Representative Cagle? Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, no.
Representative Mecklen?
No.
Representative Moran?
Yes.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Stevenson? Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Nine yeses, six no.
Mr. Chair, you're on your way to Ways and Means, so I'm transferring the chairmanship to you.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, I have a brief statement to make, and then we're going to close. We've received a number of, I have received, the committee has received a number of bills. I've received a number of requests from authors of those bills to be heard in the committee. And I've been very generous with them in these special sessions. But I am going to start, I'm going to require that you have the fiscal notes, that you have agreement with your Senate counterpart before we're going to give bills hearings in the committee, unless I am ordered to from those with higher pay grades than I. So please, if you're going to have a bill, be ready for all the things so that my the staff and I don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to get this stuff done. We are in special session, so you have to actually work on your bills between special sessions as we move forward. So with that having been said, seeing no further comments from the committee, we are going to adjourn the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. Thank you very much.